Hello and welcome to the Library Coven, a bi-weekly podcast in which two bookish besties discuss mostly YA fantasy through the lens of intersectional feminist criticism. Why? Because critique is our fangirl love language, and because talking about books is pretty magical.
I'm Jessie.
And I'm Kelly.
And this week we're discussing Vicious Spirits by Kat Cho, the second and final book in the Gumiho series. We pick up where we left off. Myung is still without her fox bead, and she's getting sicker and sicker without it. But this story really focuses a bit more on So-min and Jun-yu and their relationship as they try and help Myung. But Ji-hoon is also being haunted by Jun-yu's ex, and there's romance and adventure to get the group back in the places they want to be in their lives. Initial reactions.
I really liked getting to know more about Jun-yu and So-min, because both of them were like side characters in Wicked Fox. Like, So-min is Ji-hoon's bestie, and Jun-yu, I don't know, like, he is in their circles because of his connection to Myung, right? Like the supernatural.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like working for Yena.
That's right. I thought that like the So-min Jun-yu hate to love transition was a little contrived. I don't know if that's the right word to describe it, but I was just like, y'all are into each other from the beginning. Kat Cho writes great banter, and I loved the continued incorporation of shorter chapters with more Korean folklore. What about you? What'd you think?
I really love this story. I feel like we got to know all the characters better, and I really love getting to know So-min and Jun-yu better. I was kind of sad that we didn't see their other friend. What's his name?
Chang-won.
Yeah. I was sad that we didn't get to see more of him because he was kind of funny from last book.
Yeah.
And he's real sweet. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I liked their like enemies to lovers storyline.
Yeah.
It is one of my favorite tropes. So I was here for it. Yeah. I'll also probably just say at the top that I'm going to pronounce things very wrong. Probably. I'm trying my hardest.
Recommend if you like. I was having a hard time coming up with Rita Lakes, so I'm really glad that you had some. Thank you, librarian.
I had to think really hard about it because I was like, oh, it's hard. I think sometimes when you're reading books that incorporate other cultural elements that you're less familiar with, I think it's really hard to think of Rita Lakes, which is probably why they don't get published as often, right. Which is really frustrating.
Well, I was thinking like contemporary, almost like any contemporary like YA romance, if you're into that.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't have supernatural stuff. Like, I was thinking To All the Boys or something.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe not that. No, that's not that good of a read-alike. But anyway, contemporary YA romance, but, like, this one has supernatural in it.
Yeah. I said Cemetery Boys by Eden Thomas. If you like the part where Ji-hoon is being inhabited by a spirit, Cemetery Boys is amazing. And you kind of, like, get ghost stuff and you can learn a little bit about a different culture, not South Korean, but it's really fun. And then I said Legend Born by Tracy Dion. If you like books about, I'm just going to make you all read the book, like just read Legend Born if you haven't. Mm-hmm. But if you like books about people gaining peace regarding their family dynamics and dealing with loss, like we see a lot of the characters doing in Vicious Spirits, then I think Legend Born is a good read alike.
Oh, hey, why did we choose this book?
Because we read the first one. Duh.
Yeah.
Also the graphic novel, Almost American Girl. That one is a graphic novel memoir about a girl who moves from South Korea to America. But I thought it was helpful in learning more about Korean culture, things that I didn't know, that sort of thing. So it was a really, really good graphic novel.
Oh, that's a good recommendation.
Time to talk about world building in Through the Wardrobe. We do not have a lot of stuff for Through the Wardrobe.
No, we really don't. You have one thing. I didn't put anything in here.
I know. So like in Wicked Floss, this book takes place in Seoul, but I thought it was really cool to see the characters kind of get out of the city and see different parts of the country. Like when they're on their trek to get Jin-yu's staff, his
Bangmungi.
There we go. Kelly's going to help me with the pronunciation.
Kat Cho has pronunciation videos on her author channel on YouTube.
Oh,
so I'm
going
to link
so
to those
cool.
In the YouTube or in the show notes. To the episode. But yeah, they did get up into the mountains.
Yeah, and I just wasn't expecting to see it.
I didn't realize how mountainous Korea is. And apparently, like, the whole country is mountains.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. The whole peninsula.
I had no idea. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I just don't know that much about Korea, you know? I know it's very humid. That's... And we got to see them dealing with that humidity a lot.
Yeah, I just saw, I haven't listened to it, but there's a Revolutionary Left Radio episode about where they like go through and do like a deep dive into the Korean Peninsula and the history with Japanese colonialism and then U.S. colonialism and stuff. So I'm going to listen to that and then see if it's a recommendation I can make because I haven't listened. So
sometimes you can wreck stuff without having used it. That is librarianship. Yeah, I don't really have a lot of else to say. I think we got to see some more food stuff, which was fun when they met Changwang at the like carnival, or he was at street carts or something. It was fun to hear them talk about different food stuff, mostly that I have learned about through Kim's Convenience. So it was fun.
Let's discuss all things magic. We got a deeper dive into the magical system, including magical non-humans like the Sanshin, which are the mountain gods. Apparently San means mountain and Shin means god. So there you go. And the Dokebi, which are the, that's what Junu is, the goblins and the Gumiho. And we also got more about like their respective origins in Korean folklore. We got even like further back chronologically about like how these creatures were created and stuff. So I enjoy that part. Because I don't know very much about Korean folklore.
Yeah, I don't either. I really enjoyed how like Kat Cho did. I think she did a really good job of adding that all to the story without doing like these huge info dumps at the same time. Like it all was incorporated into the story really well instead of feeling like, you know, like homework.
Yeah, that's a good point. I really agree with that. And then so we have Junu, who's a Cheonggak Dokebi, which is handsome goblin.
He's super hot.
He's super hot. Apparently there's a K-drama called Goblin.
Oh.
Yeah, and I don't know. When I was like researching last night for the notes, there's like this, I think ACE. I don't know. Like I'm not very into K-pop or anything. Like I'm totally a noob, but they have a song called Goblin, so it seems to be like a pretty pervasive thing.
Oh, interesting.
And then Gumiho is a curse, right? Like she was cursed by someone?
Yes, the Jinyu's ex, whose name I don't remember.
Shin something. Shinye?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Maybe. But she was cursed, maybe. She's like the first Gumiho or something. And it does seem like a curse, but at the same time she was already a Gumiho when she met Jinyu. So I'm not really 100% sure if it's a curse or like, I mean, I guess she gets to live forever. That seems pretty cool. I feel like she's like wasting her time with this revenge plot.
And then, but Junu like closed her in a prison for all eternity or something?
Yeah, that was his revenge for him becoming a Dokebi was.
That's right.
Imprisoned her in this really cool looking vase thing.
And then Jihoon brought Jihoon with him and then Jihoon touched it and then got possessed.
Yes. Yes. Which was a terrible decision.
I thought that that Kat Cho did a good job like distinguishing between like when it was Jihoon was being possessed and when he was actually himself. Like you could kind of tell with the audio and the dialogue and stuff and I listened to the audiobook, I guess, but I could tell as far as like the acting went or like the their mannerisms or whatever, you could just tell when he was being possessed and when he wasn't, and I would think that would be kind of a hard thing to like put across.
Yeah, and like his facial expressions, I also listened to the audiobook, so you could tell like the difference in the voice of the person doing Jihoon versus possessed Jihoon. But yeah, it was really well done. Like you always kind of knew who was who.
And so we have Myung's bead, which is fox bead, which is stuck in spirit limbo between worlds, right?
Yes, like her mom has it.
That's right. And she's been having dreams about her mom, but they're not really dreams because she's been going into, she's been like able to communicate with her.
Mm-hmm.
So this like fox bead in limbo is fucking things up spiritually, energetically, all the things. And so like, that's our main issue. So what we see happen at the end is like Myung gets to sever the connection or a Gumiho can sever the connection with their fox beat if they haven't fed for 100 days, and if an immortal soul is sacrificed. In this case, Yena sacrifices herself. Myung's mom comes through at the end and is fine, you know, like does the right thing, because like you're pretty much dead.
Yeah.
But like, I couldn't quite tell. Is this like a miracle cure? I don't know. I don't know. I'm glad that Myung could be with Ji-hoon and
everything worked out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I put it in "One Does Not Simply." It felt like a miracle cure to me, but
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We're allowed to have different feelings about things also.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll come back to that. We'll bracket back. That and come back to there. We have this Reaper character who I really liked and kind of reminded me of Kaz for some reason, like maybe because of the suit.
Yeah, they have a now cane? That you say it.
And a hat?
I don't think, maybe a hat. I don't think, I think because they dress kind of old timey when they're like with Junyu.
Yeah. So this is a Josung Saja and his name's Hyuk, I think. It kind of reminded me of like, did you ever watch Fringe? That weird Mm-mm. supernatural show from like the 2000s.
No.
I think it was on Fox, but like they had these, they were essentially like keepers of a time. It kind of reminds me of Loki, you know, or these people
with
are
the
like
TVA.
Yeah, exactly. the timeline people, the sacred timeline or whatever. And they're like, we don't interfere, except here's us interfering. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I kind of, it reminded me of that with like the Reaper coming down and being friends with Junyu, but like not wanting to intervene, but actually intervening.
Super intervening.
Exactly. So that made me think of Loki a little bit.
Yeah. That was an interesting character because he kind of like came and went, but he had that like little moment with Somin at the end where he's like, I just want to make sure Junyu is okay. And he's like my bud, kind of, but he's not allowed to be.
But we have a forbidden friendship across space, time, and spiritual dimensions.
Yeah, and he's a literal Reaper. He's like, why is your name on my list?
Get it off of here. And we already talked about this, but like a scorned ex-lover of Junu's, who's a Gumiho, possesses Ji-hoon's body. So that's the other big magical thing that happens.
Yeah. I don't, you know what? We haven't seen a lot of magical possessions happening.
Mm-mm.
Oh, what is that? Oh, you know what's another book this reminded me of a little bit was Bruja Born.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can see that with like people coming back from the dead or whatever and messing things up.
Yeah, yeah, just like all fucked up, like all these spirits. Because like Somin is like seeing her dad and like that really like messes with like the mental health of her mom. And like people are like running into the streets on accident, like, you know. They're seeing ghosts.
That's right. They're all seeing, like, and I loved how Kat Cho was like, the children can see them. And, mm-hmm. like, these other people who haven't been completely disillusioned to have access to this.
Yeah.
So it was a cool way to be, like, to, like, quasi-hide your supernatural world. Because it's not, like, an mm-hmm. open magical system. It's a closed magical system. But it did have, like, a little bit of bleeding through and around. And because of this, like, this, like, fox bead thing. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. Now we're going to talk about conflict, villains, and good versus evil in our segment, Get Me Kylo Ren.
I just got to mention Ji-hoon's asshole dad coming back repeatedly, trying to get Halmoni's money.
Oh, I know. And I'm like, did she even leave him? Like, it's not confirmed for us whether or not she even left him money or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, bro, when he died, I was like, I don't feel bad. Like, Junyu, why do you feel bad for killing this man? Like, he deserves to die.
And wasn't he, they were like in the middle of a fight or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Collateral damage.
Yeah. Ugh, yeah.
Bye.
Ji-hoon is going to have a better life with him gone. So it's fine. We also have gods messing with people's lives for the fun of it. It turns out that Junyu was turned into a Dokebi because a god wanted to be with his girlfriend.
That's so petty. It's so petty.
It's like very Greek gods, you know, like they're yeah. just messing with people's lives to get what they want. And I was just like, very interesting. Because that god is dead at the end as well. Yeah.
I don't think so. Is it?
The mountain god? I thought he was dead at the end or something.
Oh, I don't remember them dying.
Maybe they didn't. But either way, that guy also, like, if he hadn't been messing around...
Wouldn't have all these problems.
We wouldn't have all these problems. Yeah, not like a lot of, like, no big bad villain, though. Because even, like, the girlfriend, like, ex-girlfriend of Junyu, like, you kind of understand where she's coming from.
Yeah, I would get, I mean, it's a big reveal to be like, hey, I'm a nine-tailed fox spirit that eats men. You want to still be my boyfriend?
And, like, maybe she should have given him a little more time to, like, figure it out before she, like, let some god turn him into a dokebi or whatever. But, like, then he imprisoned her for, like, 1,000 years, so also not the right
water under
do.
The bridge, apparently. But, like, you could understand, like, everyone's motivations for doing the shitty things to each other, so it didn't, I agree with you that that's, like, that's kind of what the, like, kernel of conflict is here.
Yeah. Yeah. Jihoon's dad is the only villain who I'm like, no, I don't feel bad for you, bro, like, take care of your kid.
Yeah, and Mi Young's dad was an asshole in the last book, and he also died, so.
Kat Cho does not love a dad.
Except for Somin's dad, but he also died.
Oh, he's also dead. All the dads are dead in this book. It is. But yeah, Somin had a very good dad, apparently, so yay for some good parents.
Onward, magical friends. Just as one does not simply walk into Mordor, one does not simply read fantasy without talking about race, class, gender, ability, etc., etc. This is our segment about power and bodies and how they relate. So we had this kind of like thread that continued from the last book where Jihoon's previous experience holding the fox bead, the Yeowugusul, has almost like carved out this space inside of him that makes him like the perfect vessel for possession by supernatural entities. Like, we have Mi Young's sickness, but we also have Jihoon being sick again.
Mm-hmm.
And like seizing or coming in and out of consciousness, or I don't know, just being
scared about being back in the hospital.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was like I don't know what about it. I was like, I thought it was kind of weird that it was like Jihoon has become like this perfect thing to be inhabited by magical beings now.
Yeah,
because I feel like you could get a lot more story out of this. Like, I feel like Jihoon is definitely going to be possessed again in the future. Like, they need to get some of those like paper things for him so that maybe it'll keep all the magical creatures
from possessing. It'll close his like supernatural cavity in his self.
Yeah, they probably should figure this out, because like whatever has happened to him now, like, it's definitely gonna happen again. There are no more books in this series, but still.
Nature loves a vacuum, and if you know, don't do anything about it.
Yes. Yeah, someone close that loop.
There's a lot of characters experiencing like a grieving process due to various family member deaths in the previous book. So the big ones are Jihoon's grandmother and Mi Young's mother. So I think that your read alike with for Legendborn Tracy Dion is good, because it's there is a lot of like working through who am I in this grieving process, like how do I both be in it and like the only way out is through, sort of thing.
Yeah, and we even see like Junyu, who is however old he is, I don't really know, he's very old, but he's still dealing with, you know, the way that his family died and the part he played in that, and like his family dynamics. So yeah, a lot of family things going on in this story, which I don't think I was expecting. I don't know, maybe because the last book was kind of family oriented as well.
Yeah, it was like a pretty intimate stage for all of this action, because it's mainly happening within their friend group and their families, and yeah, there's not really like this big expansive traveling or anything like that.
Yeah. Thank you for no travel. They did get to drive a cool Porsche, and that was like kind of fun.
I really thought it was sweet and loved this moment where Junyu talks about seeing himself in Changwon, where like Changwon's dad is really abusive to him, more dads, just like expecting him to be, or just like wanting him to study all the time and I don't know, like be amazingly, awesomely excellent or something, just like you only get attention when you're achieving, and like you probably get more negative attention than you positive reinforcement. And it seemed like Junu was like having a little bit of deja vu with his like own parental experience looking at Changwon and what was happening with him and his dad.
Which is really interesting because I think from the outside looking in, Jin Yu looks like he has it all together because, like, he lives in this nice house. He's, like, super hot. Like, he's just doing whatever he wants with his life. And so you don't expect him to kind of have, like, I mean, if you read books, you expect him to have, like, a very troubled past. But in real life, you wouldn't expect him to have a troubled past. Apparently, we're just going to believe all hot people have a troubled past now.
He's a hot character in a YA book. That's how it's going to be.
Yeah. He definitely has some shitty parents and like he's gotten into some trouble before. He's a bad boy. But yeah, it is funny because like you don't really think of Changwon as like this, like he's always like messing around and he seems kind of nerdy and he's like spilling stuff all the time. He's like kind of clumsy.
Yeah.
So it's funny to see Jin Yu see himself in that and also just like how we grow up and change over time.
Also because didn't Junu say that his appearance was completely different when he was a human before he was a dokkaebi?
Like his family didn't recognize him when he went back.
Ugh, tragic.
I know.
Although his family sounds like it was mean to him, so.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like mostly that coming from his dad and like the state of abuse that they're all, the whole family's living in, but still like, ugh, that's a tough go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just hard when you can't ever be good enough for like your authority figures that are around you. Like, that really messes up a person, a child.
Yeah. And sticks with them into adulthood.
Yes.
We all just need to go to therapy and figure it out.
Recovering perfectionist here. Hello. We really get a more nuanced view of Somin's parentification because her mom had her when she was in her mid-teens, I believe. What do you think about this?
I really love this aspect of the book because it was like really great to see So-min's mother dealing with the way that she had turned So-min into like an early adult, kind of forcing So-min to grow up a little faster than she should have. But then we see her mom taking responsibility for the part she played in that and deciding to let So-min live the life that she wants to have. So-min really wants to leave Seoul and go somewhere else for school, kind of travel the world. Without the responsibility of having to take care of her mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought this was really good and I really appreciated it because, you know, my mom was really like was older when she had me. So I can't imagine like if you're kind of young when you have a kid, like you're still a young person, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was great to see that like they worked out as a family, even though like she had her young, like that doesn't mean that everything's not going to be fine.
Right.
And she took responsibility for, you know, turning So-min into kind of like this young, responsible adult and was kind of like, this might not have been for the best. It was the best I could do. And I want you to like have your childhood back.
Yeah. Or so, have like some of that freedom and that the mom mm-hmm. is actually able to take the responsibility, like you said. And I just thought it was so refreshing that they had an actual fucking conversation about it.
Mm-hmm,
and that the mom was like being accountable and understanding what her child was saying, like mind blown.
I know. I was like, you know, this is fantasy because this shit does not happen in real life.
Now that's some therapy.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was really well done and I appreciated seeing it. It was refreshing. Like you just don't see this a lot in real life, but also we don't really see it in books either. So it was well done. Okay, we're gonna talk about Mi-young. She's sick because a piece of her is missing, but it's fixed magically and tied up in the magic surrounding her Yawagu soul. And I don't know. I felt kind of weird about it. It's hard because being a sick person, like a chronically ill person, I'm like, yes, I would take a magical cure to fix my sickness in real life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how I feel about the magical cure in the book. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's iffy, you know? What do you think?
It seems like a very convenient little back door. And it's like, Mi-young already hasn't been feeding since the last book. And like, I understand it's like narrative expediency as far as like, she then won't, Mi-young won't be an eternal being who has to eat souls. Like she could be with her, you know, boyfriend and can have like a teen life. So like, I get it from a narrative perspective, but at the same time, it did feel like not too easy, but like, it rubbed me the wrong way because I also mentioned it, you know, up earlier. So I see what you're feeling. I see it's just like a little splinter.
I guess it's hard because she wasn't like sick before, like at the beginning of the last book.
Right.
Like, it really just takes away her by the end of everything, it takes away all of her magical abilities. She's no longer super fast, super strong, like all those sort of things. Like, but at the same time, because like we spent all of this book with her being sick, I'm kind of like, man, that was just like, it seemed a little too easy, like too simple of a fix for me, I think. But I don't know. She wasn't like chronically ill or, you know, so I don't know.
Right. And also, I don't understand how, like, if she's born a supernatural being, like, how can you unbecome supernatural, you know? Like, wow.
I mean, I guess you just get rid of that Yawa Goosel and then you're good to go.
You just need your mom to sacrifice her immortal soul for you.
I mean, she was dead anyway, so it doesn't really seem like it's going to change that much.
No, nope. You just can't visit her in her creepy dreams anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't understand. I don't know what the like folklore is around the afterlife in this book. Like that I wasn't real sure about, but it seems like it's all going to be fine. Finally, it's time for Shipwrecked, a segment about sexuality, asexuality, sex, romance, and relationships. And sometimes we take liberties and do some shipping of our own.
Mi-young and Ji-hoon are still together. We didn't really see too much of them because we were focused on them in the last book. We were definitely more focused on Somin and Junu. I thought they had excellent banter, good chemistry. I'm not sure if I ship, but I thought that they...
Somin and Junu.
Yeah.
You mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also Mi-young and Ji-hoon. I don't know. Somin and Junu, I think I ship more than Mi-young and Ji-hoon. I don't know why.
I think we spent more time with them together in the last book. And so, like, Somin and Junu, we don't spend as much... Like, we spend a lot of time with them both, but not both of them together. Because they're, like, off doing their own little things or whatever.
Right. I'm curious what you're, like, I don't know. There's been some discussion on our Discord server, RE, like this trope of the immortal old magic person in love with a teenager. So I'm, I don't know. I feel like we should at least put it out there to talk about in Shipwrecked a little bit.
Yes. So do you want to give your examples?
Examples. Bella and Edward. Alina and the Darkling. Somin and Junu.
Okay, I feel like Alina and the Darkling is not really fair since, spoiler alert, the Darkling is evil.
And a bajillion years old.
Yes, he's very old. Yeah, Alina and the Darkling. Also, Alice and Hada from, you know.
Nightmareverse.
You know, sometimes I'm okay with it and sometimes I'm not.
Yeah. I kind of am the same way. It's like, it's okay. Like, I'll know it when I see it. I know when it's fine when I see it. And I know when it's not fine.
It's like pornography.
Yeah, exactly.
You know when you see it. Just add a little Scalia quote in the episode. Yeah, I don't know. It is kind of weird because, like, Alina and the Darkling, no. Bella and Edward, I was there for it until I became an adult. And then I was like, God,
these books
Edward
are trash.
Fucking creep. Yeah, the books are trash. Edward's a fucking creep. He's like a stalker. And Bella is super boring. Allison Hada, super there for it.
Yep. It does depend, but it's interesting that it seems to be like mostly young women and immortal men, too.
Yeah,
like,
let's see the reverse.
And yeah, I don't think we've seen the reverse. And I don't think we've seen like both people being immortal or like a lesbian relationship where one is immortal and one isn't, or I don't know.
No, it's always like, I'm trying to think, mostly hetero relationships and Yeah, an immortal dude, non-immortal girl. And for the, I mean, all I can think of right now is ACOTAR, and I'm like, all the girls become immortal. I mean, they're not girls, they're women. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
And they become immortal. So like now they're on an even playing field. But at the same time, I'm like, they're still like 19 years old and you're like 500.
Right? Like the difference between like power in so many different senses, like how much knowledge you have, how much like mm-hmm. money you have, how many connections you have. Like, I don't know. It's, I feel like it's this like recurring trope, and I'm curious why it's so YA. I don't know.
Maybe it serves as a way. This sounds so terrible. Maybe it serves as a way to make sure that the boy, man, whatever counterpart is mature and up to the standards of the ladies in the stories. And we do that by making them have lived 500 years and then they're up to the maturity of a 19-year-old girl.
That's funny.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why we do it.
What do you all think out there in the ether listening? Tell us what you think.
Yes. Let us know. Why does this trope exist?
And why is it both a little bit weird, but also a little okay? In this fantasy?
A little alluring, you mean.
Okay, yeah, that's what you mean. Oh, yeah, you got me.
Yeah. It's a weird trope, but also at the same time, I really like Somin and Junyu together. I love their banter. He's like kind of a bad boy and standoffish and like needs to work through his issues. And
he deflects with humor, which we love.
Yeah. Which I love. And Somin is just like not standing for it. But at the same time, she's like, let's make out at this piano.
Yes.
And I'm like, it works.
She seemed to like go for what she really wanted, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. She wasn't like a timid MC, like main character, mm-hmm. which I really like.
She's no Bella Swan, let me tell you what.
No, she is not.
Like the opposite. And I really like that. I feel like we are seeing more of that in the books that we read, where we have like a very like headstrong young female character. And I think it's fun. I enjoy it, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's better than the alternative.
Now we're going to talk about writing style, narration, characterization, plot structure, and basically whatever else we want to in a segment called Kill Your Darlings. So this is marketed as a companion novel. Sequel, ? Is there a difference? I don't know.
It feels like a sequel because you can't know what's going on with Mi Young and Ji Hoon unless you read the first one. But the book isn't really focused on them. I always think of companion novels like, you know how sometimes I think there'll be like a book that you don't have to have read the rest of it for, or like,
yeah,
sometimes it focuses on like stuff that happened before we get like prequels almost.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I just put that on there because I was curious. It's interesting how they marketed it as a companion.
Yeah.
Maybe because like the main characters are different, have changed, mm-hmm. have shifted. Like we get like a, I don't know, like a sideways view. It's not like you're getting a different view.
Yeah. But it's also weird because we still get Ji-hoon and Mi-young's point of view for parts of the story, so mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought it says Gumiho number 2 on Goodreads, so exactly. I just assumed it was a sequel.
Same.
Okay.
Kat Cho has done wonderful pronunciation videos for us. There's one for Vicious Spirits and Wicked Fox. Not to mention there's also a glossary and notes in both of them. Hashtag bless.
Also, the notes were in the audiobook, which was really nice. The glossary wasn't, but I also have a copy of the book from the library, so it was cool to go through the glossary. It really helped me, like, when I was doing the show notes. I was like, I don't know how to spell anything now, because I listened to it.
Exactly. That's the one issue with when we listen to audiobooks, and you're like, mm-hmm. How do we spell things?
Yeah, no idea. I kind of mentioned earlier, obviously, I'm not at all familiar with Korean mythology, and I really enjoy learning more through these books, and I loved having the author's note explaining things at the end. At the same time, I think Catch Ho did a really great job of setting a story that's outside of our Western mythology, and expecting us to figure it out along the way. We very often suspend our disbelief for the stories that we're familiar with, but I think we don't always give that same effort to stories that we're not. So there isn't a ton of hand-holding for the audience, and I don't really think there needs to be. You pick it up as you go along, just like you do with every other fantasy novel, and I thought this was really well done.
Couldn't agree more. I love what you just said. Before we end, it's time for real talk. Did reading this book make your perspective change in any way? Or did it make you interrogate a concept, system, or trend that you hadn't before? And Jesse's actually coming through with our topic for real talk today.
Kelly has written nothing in here, and I wrote something for once. I feel super special. I just wanted to talk about parental sacrifices, both big and small. I think we do see these in YA books sometimes, but I feel like we don't see them as much now. But what I really liked about this book were the sacrifices of, obviously, Hominy in the last book. But in this book, the two moms kind of stepping up, and Yenna, who wasn't like a great mom, but she was willing to do what she needed to do so that Mian could have the rest of her life as she wanted it, not as an immortal being. And then we have, which was kind of like a big sacrifice, because I don't know what it means to sacrifice your immortal soul, but I think that
it
must
sounds
be like...
It sounds intense.
It sounds big. It sounds like a big decision. And then we have Somin's mom, who is like, you know, I want you to go away. Don't worry about me. Like, parents are supposed to make sacrifices for their kids. And we often get like a lot of bad parents in YA novels. So it was just really nice to see like these good parents making both big and small sacrifices for the happiness and like well-being of their children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just really enjoyed it. So I thought that was really sweet and really nice, and something we don't see in real life all that often. Or maybe some people do, and something we don't see in books very often. So I just really enjoyed that.
I feel like contemporary YA talks about this a bit more, especially if mm-hmm. they're like diaspora, members of a diaspora community, you know, like parents, mm-hmm. parental sacrifices or whatever, as far as immigrating or working jobs and stuff, different jobs and stuff like that. So I feel like we hear more about this in contemporary YA that's actually talking about like our lived experiences right now, and a lot of that is financial hardship and stuff like that. But yeah, there aren't that many of them. I don't remember these things happening very much in fantasy, YA fantasy.
No, I don't either. And it's nice to see sacrifices that like the kid feels like is a good thing for them, because I think sometimes when we get those immigration stories, like the kids feel like they owe something to their parents because their parents made a huge sacrifice for them.
Yes.
That they have to like live up to these expectations now. Whereas I feel like with both of these in this book, it's like, no, this is for the well-being of the kid, and the kid can understand why that is. Like, so I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. I don't know why I put it in real talk. It probably could have gone and Kill Your Darlings, but I don't know. I think it's just one of those things that I feel like parents should be doing and they don't. So I'm just like, real talk. Take care of your children.
You have children. You can't lord over all the things you do for them and make them feel guilty about it.
Exactly. Because you are responsible for them because you had them. So, yeah, I just liked it. It was nice to see, and I appreciated it.
Time for a card question.
Let's see what we have today.
Let's see.
Kelly's going to drop the box.
Is the main character similar to or radically different from the other characters? I think Somin's pretty different from all the other characters. She seems like more sure of herself and confident than any of the other characters, Ji-hoon, Mi-young, Chang-won. Maybe not quite maybe even more confident than Junu. I don't know. She hasn't had hundreds of years to be disappointed in life.
That's true. And I think a lot of Junu's confidence is a facade. So,
yeah.
Somin's does seem pretty real. She's pretty different than the other characters. And I think she she's like the mom of the group. So yeah.
She's like scrappy in a way that none of the other ones are. Like, I just imagine her like throwing down, getting in a fight, no problem. Like, I agree.
I mean,
with
she
you.
Was
Mama
like
Bear.
Tried to stab that mountain god. I'm like, bro, you're gonna die.
She's like not even giving it a second thought. I'm going for it.
Yeah,
I
didn't
like
I
Poe
wasn't
Dameron
sure she was making out alive.
But yeah, I think so. Yeah, she's very different than the other characters. I think
I would agree with them. Do you want to do one more?
Sure. Oh, this is interesting. Do you know anyone with motivations similar to those of the main character? What did Somin want? Her hot immortal guy.
Yeah. And I guess she wants to like leave, and she has these like traveling aspirations, and she wants to see the world and learn about new places and people. I don't know. You know what? I feel like I do have a friend that travels quite a lot, and it's always like, wow, you really go places, and that's pretty impressive. I won't like name them because I don't know.
I'm thinking also of a friend that's like very outgoing and just like uninhibited and just like goes out and does things, even if it's not like cool, or I don't know. She just like does what her heart says.
Yeah. And yeah, so I guess yes, but at the same time, like, I don't think I have any friends who are like fighting for the immortal soul of their boyfriend who is also a dokebi.
Lainey.
Yeah, Lainey
will
fight
for
the soul of her
lady's immortal soul.
No, she has a boyfriend who is an immortal cat.
Oh,
and she's
okay.
Like, no. Thanks for listening to The Library Coven. We'll be back in 2 weeks for a discussion of A Heart So Fierce and Broken by Bridget Kemmerer. As always, we'd love to be in conversation with you. Let us know what you think of the episode, anything we missed, or just say hi by dropping a line in the comments or by reaching out to us on Twitter or Instagram at The Library Coven.
You all know this already, but you can subscribe to the show on the podcast app of your choice. And please rate and review and spread the word to other people who you think would enjoy it. And guess who makes this show? Jesse and me. So if you want to support our labor financially, you can make a one-time donation to us on Ko-fi. And you can support us monthly on Patreon or by shopping at our bookshop.org affiliate page. Until next time, stay magical.